from the Metro Business Center at Douglas and Dundee in Louisville's Highlands. It's episode 57 of the Startup Podcast, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. My name is Dan Vonderheide. I do it once a week, and now back in iTunes. Very excited to say that I was able to get all of that straightened out. My old feed was broken and missing several episodes. I now have it updated, so if you are an iPhone person, make sure to subscribe, rate me 5 stars, naturally, and maybe leave me back by a review. Let me know what you think. Of course, I do prefer the Stitcher Radio app. It gives me great feedback on listening habits and downloads and that sort of thing. So you can download that at stitcherradio.com. This week we have Ron and Ariel from Collabor Music. They are one in the inaugural class to the Velocity SI Accelerator. So I caught them right off of that announcement. So we talk a little bit about that. They have a cloud-based multi-track collaborative software for musicians, which means a lot to me. I've been a guitar player for over half my life. Oh my gosh, over half my life at this point. I don't know how that happened, but it did. So, but it's really cool, and they showed me how it worked, and I have took some video of it on my phone. I'm going to fire up a YouTube channel and eventually get that stuff up there so you can get a behind-the-scenes look as to what we're doing here. Louisville.am is fired up, man. We have some content online, and I'm frequently adding shows or talking to new content providers so I can make these partnerships and build this station, if you will, or this network into something that's really going to contribute to the community. I can help you with your podcast if that's something you're interested in. I have the studio here. I have the equipment. I have some expertise and some knowledge. And if that's something you're interested in, or if you just would like to maybe get on board and sponsor the Startup Podcast or one of our other shows, you can email me at startup@louisville.am. Let's get into it. Ron and Ariel from Collabor Music, the first podcast recorded in the new Louisville.am studio. It's Startup. Welcome to the Metro Business Center.
Exactly.
Oh, baby. You guys are the first podcast in the new studio.
Well, thanks for having us. We're glad to open this thing up for you.
So. You're used to being in studios, right? You're musicians, right?
Yeah, I'd say we are used to being in some studios. Yeah. We've done some recording in studios. Yeah, definitely. So.
But you guys didn't grow up together or anything, right?
No. He's from Canada. So.
That's right.
Right, he's one of the enemies.
And you're from here?
I'm from D.C. originally.
So, okay. Yeah. Dave Grohl's from D.C.
Is he really?
Yeah.
You know, I got an interesting story about him, actually. Maybe we'll get into it a little bit later. Or do you want to just hear it now?
Go right ahead.
All right, yeah. So we were looking for a brand ambassador, and I got into contact with one of my pledge brothers when I was at American University, and he now works at a promotion company, and he's a director for – they promote – fashion shows and, you know, live bands and stuff like that in New York and Atlanta. And so I called him about Collabor, and, you know, he seemed really interested, and we were just kind of talking about stuff we could do. And when he was flying back to New York from South by Southwest, he was reading this article, and Dave Grohl was describing kind of like a service similar to Collabor and how artists need to embrace something like that. And he sent me an email, and he's like, you know, if we're going to reach for a brand ambassador, we might as well reach for the top.
For somebody who had the idea himself,
right,
of sorts.
Yeah, definitely. And so one of his partners at this company that he works at used to work at, I think, at William Morris or something like that. It's one of the Rob, do you know where Rob used to work?
Yeah, it's William Morris.
Yeah, it's like the biggest talent agency, I guess, in the world or something like that. And so he's like, let me see who Rob knows, who might know him. And he said William Morris, I guess, apparently represents him or sets up arena shows for him. So we started working with Rob, and once Rob gives us the go-ahead, he's going to try to get us in contact with his ex-coworkers at William Morris. So
that'd be awesome.
That would be awesome. So, I mean, if we can get someone like Dave Grohl, who's really big into the indie music scene and just, like, you know, still in touch with his roots, kind of.
Grohl, he appeals to everybody. He's got to be one of the coolest guys on the planet.
Oh, I'm sure. He's the only guy, when they did the iPhone 5 thing, their band played there. You know what I mean? That's,
yeah.
Steve Jobs isn't letting anyone, he wasn't there, but you know what I'm saying.
I did meet Dave Grohl once.
Did you?
When they were touring with the Chili Peppers, and I was at a rock station here in town, and we did a meet and greet with the Foo Fighters, and I got a picture, big picture blown up in my basement.
That's awesome.
Of me and him shaking hands.
You don't have his phone number or anything, do you?
No, no, not his, but I do have some people's phone numbers. It just happens.
If you need to throw it out, what station were you at?
I was at the Fox when it was at 100.5.
I think you guys might have played one of my band, like, my band's first record, like on like some sort of on, it was like Sunday night where you played like
yeah,
like people just would mail CDs in.
I forgot what they call that show.
I don't remember, but I remember that was like we were in my friend's Riced Out Honda, and that was a big event. You know,
yeah,
yeah, we were a big time then.
Airplay,
so, yeah, instantly we were dismissing people and telling people to avoid eye contact and
so
stuff like that.
Should I imagine that because you guys are musicians, that that was the beginning of this idea?
Yeah, definitely. It was the beginning of the idea. So Ariel and I are still into a band today, but it's kind of like we haven't really been playing a lot lately. But he and...
You're in a band together and you're business partners?
Yeah, it's weird. I guess once you're in a... Being in a band is like being in a business. So it's like if I can tolerate him being in a band, we'll probably be okay business partners.
Okay.
So... And, you know, we got used to arguing with each other by making music, so kind of it's a natural fit for business,
okay.
I think.
Yeah, it's less tension in the business.
Exactly. So
no doubt.
Although, as the drummer, when I get mad at him, I can't hit anything like for the business side of things, but when we're playing, I might play a little bit heavier if I disagree with him or something like
right.
that, but can't do it in the business.
Not being heard of for drummer to chuck drumsticks.
Something at, I want.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
You know what's happening.
I've been hit with those sticks before, like going from like the four tom over to a hi-hat, like in my face. That hurts.
Yeah.
You know, just, it hurts really bad, actually.
All right.
But so he and Jason, who is the other guy in this band, weren't you guys just talking about, like, how we were looking for a bassist forever? And still.
Everybody is. That's why when anybody says, hey, will you teach my kid to play guitar? And I say, yeah, I'll teach him how to play bass. That way he'll always have a job.
Right, right. Exactly. They're the rarest breed. It's almost like Bigfoot. So
yeah.
I haven't seen. There's no one who's like, yeah, I play bass. Like, I'm a. I've seen, actually, I knew one guy who went to some music school in Nashville. It's famous. I forgot what it's called. It's not, it's big. Belmont. He went to Belmont. He played bass. He was like a bass virtuoso. Like, he played, like, I think it's like some Beethoven thing on like a six-string bass, and it was just nuts. And he was in the metal and stuff like that. It was kind of cool. But that was the only one who's like, I'm a bass player. Usually it's like, yeah, I play guitar, but like this band needs a bassist, so I kind of like sub in on that.
Bass is the best.
Yeah,
it's like playing lead guitar for the entire song.
Exactly, you play the whole time. So.
We better talk about business instead of music. We that's a different podcast.
Although I want
this is actually does lead into the business because yeah.
Kind
of how we came about, which is we were in a band. I was playing guitar, my buddy Jason was playing guitar, Ron was playing drums, wrote some pretty good songs, but we needed some extra vocals to fill it out. Needed some bass, and. You know, we were thinking about where we could make an outreach to fill out the band, you know, get the full sound.
Beyond so, the old pin, push pin
at the local music store. Yeah, absolutely. So we're thinking, well, why can't we just post our music online and have a million people play on top of it, hear what they have to offer, and then we can choose the best one.
Yeah.
And
that's really what it came down to. It was like, why can't we post our music online? And then it was like, well, why do we have to have just one bassist? You know, we could have 1,000 competing to be on a song and switch them out and see which one we like the best or have two of them combine. It's really like kind of like a new way to make music, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like Wikipedia, they say they get to the truth of an article simply because you've got people, you have all these people on the spectrum of like what they think about a certain topic.
Mm-hmm.
And then like by like battling it out, they eventually get to like some sort of ultimate truth from like all these edits from people with different opinions. It's kind of the same thing that we're trying to do with Collabro, which is, you know, you get the ultimate truth of a song when you get a lot more people kind of competing to make it the best it could be. You know, we have a lot of songs which I think we could really, like, we're like, oh, this is a great song. But, you know, there's someone out there who, like, could hear that. It's easier to build on something than it is to kind of build something initially. Like, sometimes I'll see things, and I would have never thought of the initial idea, but I see it, and I'm like, I think I can improve it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost the same thing with music. You could start it off, and then someone gets on there and just puts, like, a really great vocals, like Freddie Mercury vocals on some of our songs, it's going to do well. You know, it's like, it would be a lot better.
It's great, but what happens when you want to go on tour?
I guess that's always kind of the issue. It's you would have to find someone, I guess, in the sub in for them. If the music does well enough, move that person out, I guess.
Right, so. And hope that they're, you know, not a
crazy
douchebag.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly. If you can get popular enough to do a serious tour, then I guess it's kind of worth it for someone to travel out. I mean, you're taking months of your life to do something like that anyway.
So. Right.
And you could probably go to more professional, like, say, in the singing example. If we had music that was already popular and, say, this person was in, like, Brazil and we couldn't get them up here, we could probably go to, like, legit singers and be like, we need you to, like, sing this show.
Right.
You know, here's the music that's already popular. Do you want to be, like, it's almost like a different actors doing the same play in different cities or something like that.
It's like recreating the concept of a band.
Right. It could theoretically. We definitely think that, you know, not to, like, to our own horn, but like if this goes the way we want it to go, it could be very transformative. and how music's made.
Sure.
So
yeah, I mean, there's one of the things that we learned as we sort of built out that idea from its beginning is that there's really a lot of space for fans to get involved in the music.
Definitely.
Give feedback to artists on the songs they're creating, what they like, what they don't like. But also, by integrating fans into the site, providing them with a place to stream audio, follow their favorite bands, even mix and match different instrumentation within the songs that they like. It also, I think, provides a way of tracking your fans. Where do they live? Where are you hot? So if you do want to go on tour, you can actually use the information from Collabra to figure out where you're going to be popular.
I suppose it would be smart to sort of describe what
Collabra Music is.
Yeah, we do all this great stuff. How do you do that?
We weren't planning on going there today.
I'll change my line of questioning.
Should we introduce? So we're CollabraMusic.com is the service that we're doing. We call it Collabra, and it's an online space for musicians to get together and collaborate while bringing fans into the creative process. That's ultimately like kind of the basics of what we're doing.
Okay.
So bringing the fans into the process is something that I also think is revolutionary. There are some collaborative spaces out there. I don't think they do it as elegantly as we do.
It's a lot better than asking Yoko Ono what she thinks.
Right. Exactly.
You know, we all know where that went.
Yeah. That's, and there's plenty of those out there. So if you can get maybe like a bunch of people to balance out Yoko Ono's opinion, maybe Paul McCartney wouldn't have gone off and did what he did. But, the fan feedback is something new because you can get fans involved in the creative process. It's not like you're just like, hey, I think the CD's going to do well, and you just put it out there. They're involved in like helping you select like the best guitar piece. And it doesn't have to be different musicians. It could be like sometimes I play drums and I want to put like double bass in it and they hate it, but I think it would sound better. Let's get the fans' perspective, you know? Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of opportunity to really get like, because we're doing everything on like a granular level, like a per track basis, not like finalized tracks. It really allows fans to be like, I like this, I don't like this, do this differently. So that's what I think is truly transformative about this.
Go ahead.
To Ron's point, I mean, that the idea of holding every single track separately and being able to track every instrument within a song allows you to, say, listen to a song, say, I like the guitar, and then follow that guitarist onto their social sites, find other songs that they've contributed to, maybe with other bands as well. So there's a real technological advantage to what we're doing. And not to mention a few other things that set us apart, namely that we're providing a recording suite online that's free to the user. And, that's...
Okay, we need to talk about that too. Like revenue models.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we revenue models is definitely something that we get a lot of questions on. We've got plenty of time. Our ultimate goal initially is to grow the user base as big as it can be. But, there's definitely many ways we can approach it from the revenue model. We've always been kind of the assumption that, the example I always use is when I was in high school in that crappy band that got played on the Fox, which was cool. but we sold $1,500 worth of CDs to like our friends and family. And maybe that's not a lot for the individual artist, but in aggregate it could be significant. So
yeah.
We were thinking like more of like an iTunes/Kickstarter transaction fee model. Now, a lot of people have kind of had, questions about that. And they're valid. Some people say like we should push for sponsorships. Like, if you're viewing a project from Louisville, Mom's Music, for example, might be a sponsor of that particular project, advertising dollars for them. There's also subscription fees that people have suggested as well, or usage fees.
I mean, you're either going to, I'm using Audacity right now. I could record an album into Audacity, right?
Yeah.
It is a piece of software.
Right.
And if you're providing this software and a collaborative environment where you can reach other musicians and other fans and all that stuff, that has subscription service written all over it.
Yeah.
You're getting a little customer validation here.
Right. Yeah.
And keep in mind though, we're trying to create a collaborative environment. It's really a community of musicians, and that's going to build a community of fans that go with it. And of course, if you're a musician looking to collaborate, it really is a lot more attractive of a place to go if there are already a lot of musicians on there.
That's true.
So really our first priority is just to grow that community, get people collaborating, find out really what works about the site, what maybe some users would rather change about it. So we're going to use, like Ron said, sort of take our time, build that community, make our product as good as it can be, and then build out our revenue model from there. By the time it gets to the point where we would want to charge for subscriptions, we'll know if we can charge for song sales. Yeah. Or other revenue points that we're exploring. So
that's the thing that I think is important to highlight, is that, you know, from a monetization strategy standpoint, we've got like 12 solid potential ways we could go about it. And I don't think that's a lot of thing that a lot of businesses can say. You know, it's either like, this is subscription, or it has to be free and they only do advertising. You know, we've got the potential for subscription, you know, various forms of that, like a kind of Dropbox, maybe once they get to a certain usage level,
sure,
then bumping in the subscription, or maybe as they add certain features onto our recording suite, you know, maybe those would be like a one-time fee or a subscription-based. There's gamification, which has worked in a lot of games in terms of making revenue, and then, you know, just advertising as well.
Sure.
Song sales, transaction sales, if bands sell merchandise off there. There's a ton of ways we can do it. So I'm not really that worried about, you know, I think we have so many options and we could target it to specific markets to see what works and what doesn't, that really it's kind of like building, I want us to be known as like the place you go to first, you know, and that everyone knows about. And I think that's important in order to kind of get that initial feedback, at least in the beginnings, kind of give.
And how long has this been under construction?
Probably about a little over a year, I'd say.
Okay, just a year into it.
We built a lot of it out, and then had
who built you? The two of you built it, or do you have
mostly me?
Okay, Ron, so yeah. You have programming acumen.
It was something we really wanted to do, so I taught myself like what I needed to do. So,
yeah. Respect.
Yeah, I've been
love it.
The reason why I kind of got into the programming game was when I went to American, and tell me if you want to, like, this is boring or you don't want to talk about it. When I went to American, after my first semester, I sold like textbooks back to the bookstore like everyone does.
Yeah.
I bought them for like $25 and then sold them again for $75. And I was talking to a friend and I was like, if I could find someone who's taking that class and it's the same book, I sell it for $50. We both win. We get 25 more. They get 25 less. So we started building that site, and we actually got like 400 users to sign up in like a week span, or maybe it was 2 weeks, right before Christmas break. And then when we came back, we're like, this is kind of growing. Like, we either need to like quit school and focus on this whole time or not. And, you know, I didn't really have that much confidence in like the entrepreneurial. It was like really new to me. I just kind of wanted to like get my degree and get a regular job. And so we didn't really pursue it. And then you see Textbook X coming out.
Oh, okay.
And Amazon starts doing it. And we're like, oh, we're right there, you know, and we just didn't jump on it. So I came back to U of L and I was like, I'm going to go major in accounting and finance because there's a lot of jobs out there for that. And it's easy, you know. And then my friend who we worked on, he's the one who learned how to do the programming at that time. He started doing like Facebook games. And at one point, like, he did Mob Wars. I don't know if you ever heard of it.
Sure.
And it was at one point, I think people estimated that
I've been invited to it 250 times.
Yeah, exactly. That's my friend, you know. And they estimated that he was making like $1 million a month, you know, with like people paying to like Godfather favor points.
Wow.
And then Zanga, I think, is the one who like they copied it with Mafia Wars, so he sued them and like won that. But so while this is all going on, he's living like this kind of like superstar lifestyle on the West Coast. I'm at KPMG working like 80-hour weeks, just making like $46,000, and I was like, it's time to learn how to program, and that was like 5 years ago. So
okay.
I've been learning ever since then. So that's kind of what started me programming. And then, you know, I've always wanted to do, I just really don't like corporate jobs. I don't know, like Ariel will probably describe it better. I'm like a animal in a trap. Like, I just, it's brutal. I'm not a big fan.
But you have a job, right?
I do.
Okay.
Which he actually likes, which I think is pretty rare.
Yeah, I'm not going to complain about my job.
I'm not baiting you into that at all. But it does sort of, it can be distracting to your focus as to...
It certainly takes a lot of time away from Collabra.
Yeah.
Which...
But at the same time, it provides resources for us. Like, I'm full-time on it now, and that's only because, you know, Ariel's out there still. He's the breadwinner still, you know. It's almost like a marriage. Yeah. So it's like, he supports me to pursue Collabra as aggressively as I can.
So that leads sort of like, I'm imagining you're bootstrapped up to this point?
Yeah.
Yep.
Completely. Okay. 100%.
We did get a grant from KSTC. Yeah, we got that. And then the Velocity, we're going to there.
So. Yeah, right. I was going to pat you on the back and sort of ask you how all of that transpired. You know, it's the first class.
Yeah.
That's right.
Pretty cool. We're nominated to Techstars Chicago, actually, and, you know, we didn't have enough traction. They were really great about communicating with us. The guy who runs it really liked the idea. He just wanted to see more customer validation. So, you know, that was kind of our first choice, and then we applied. Not to say that Velocity wasn't. We just, you know, we didn't really know about Velocity when we applied to Techstars.
That's right.
And then we heard about it, you know, after finding out that we didn't get into Techstars, and we were like, you know, this could be a really good opportunity. I love Louisville, so I would love to, you know, support something in Louisville if we were successful. Like, it'd be, I would feel good not only because we're successful, but also because we came out of that program and would help kind of build that program up as well, because I really do love this city. I don't know why, you know, one thing people have asked me, they're like, hey, if you know, a VC firm was like, here's $1 million, you got to move out to California, would you take it? And I'm like,
Yeah, that's a toughie.
Because it's like, you know, these VC firms probably have investments in like remote desktop software and like sell those products, but they still require you to be like within walking distance of their offices, you know? And there's something to be said about FaceTime, but it's like, follow your message, you know? With the technology the way it is, you should be able to work anywhere. And if it's lower cost to live there, why not? And
that's right. So I mean, I've had people on the podcast that moved here specifically for that reason.
Right.
You know,
right.
It just, they like, can work remotely with programmers, but it costs them a lot less to run the company here than it does.
Definitely.
Anything, yeah. Anywhere else.
I guess the only drawback is talent. You know, a lot of like real tech savvy people will kind of gravitate towards, you know, the coast. And, you know, I think the risk profile of some people going out there and joining startups is a lot different than maybe this area. So that's kind of been a bummer. But, you know, we're getting past
it. But you're doing everything yourself.
Right.
Yeah,
but I mean, I could always use more help. So,
yeah.
So is that not necessarily going to affect you guys? Or I guess you probably have a larger picture here that you're looking at down the road that, you know,
It hasn't been that bad yet. You know, it'd be nice to, you know, like you'll find like some really good programmers. So when I started off, I learned something called PHP, and that seems to have fallen out of style or fashion recently, you know. And so I find like a lot of Ruby programmers, and I'm like, oh, I already built like a lot of the site in PHP, you know, like so I mean, like, you find a lot of really talented people, but they're like in a different discipline of like from a scripting language perspective, so it's kind of hard to bring them on if they're not, you know, that versed in what you're working with. But you know, luckily it hasn't really been an issue yet. I've been training actually a lot of programmers, because it's, you know, like I'll meet people and I'm like, hey, do you like what you're doing? And they're like, no, not really. I'm like, go to Code Academy, it's like really easy. You could instantly, like in 6 months, you know, learn how to program and start getting a job that pays a lot more, you know. And they're like, huh? And they don't, like, it's all on the individual to really like work, you know, just put the work in. And I mean, it's like the people in the 20s who were building buildings and stuff like that, that's what we do now, but not with buildings, you know.
Sure.
Like, we're the engineers of like this generation. So, and it's the knowledge, the schooling of it is free, you know. It's an opportunity that I feel like people see here programming, it's kind of like math. They hear math, they're like, oh, math. Just like, you know, if you spend enough time with it, it makes sense. It's all logical, you know. It's just, I don't know, that's another discussion.
You each have assignments or titles in this organization, right? You're CEO, Ariel? Is that?
CEO.
Yeah, we call Ron our CEO.
Okay.
Yeah, I would be a COO, but we're both co-founders generally.
Yeah, I think we pretty much operate in kind of like a shared role to a certain extent.
What does that division of labor look like? I mean, you're a programmer and you are not.
Yeah,
that's correct. Right.
So you're thinking about business stuff, accounting stuff, and nuts and bolts.
Yeah, Ron's taking the lead on development. He's, you know, managing some developers as well. And that role has been absolutely critical. And I don't have much of a hand in that, but I pretty much have my hands in everything else. Yeah, I just like to play Pac-Man. But when, you know, I'm not, you know, running away from ghosts, I'm managing the finances of the business,
doing legal stuff,
filing, provisional patents, really just keeping us afloat and making sure that we have the cash and we keep on track, managing our priorities as well.
And so, I'd say we share a lot of the role of like the ideation and kind of the, you know, direction of the company. Like, we kind of split that. We negotiate on like where we think we're going with that sort of thing. So it works out well.
And with the velocity, there is a monetary exchange for percentage in this company. So you all of a sudden, bam, you have some investment money, which I assume you're just going to put in the bank and tear through it. But, you know, spend it indiscriminately on
whatever
cigarettes and booze or whatever, you know, whatever startup
we're going
people
to Vegas,
spend their money on. But what do you expect? I mean, it's great to get somebody to hand you an investment check and put you through this accelerator. But what was the main reason that you wanted to go into this accelerator program?
I would say, you know, I know a lot of the mentors involved with it, as well as, you know, Tony, who runs it, and I think Mark Crane, who's like the chairman of it. And, you know, they have a lot of extraordinary business expertise. And the closer I can get to these people who are successful and at doing what they do and like get as much guidance as possible from them.
So it wasn't necessarily the money, but
the money is definitely a factor.
Well,
it definitely helps, but, and we're going to definitely use it. We've already, you know, probably have like half of it planned out. But, you know, it's the experience of these people who we happen to have come in contact through a Kaufman example like that, you know, it's just those are people you want on your side to help, you know, because they know what they're doing. So it just, that's a big reason.
Yeah, it's also extremely convenient that it's, you know, it's local. It's, you know, like walking distance from my work and from where I live. And, you know, that's a big part of it. I need to keep on my full-time job, and I didn't want, you know, something where the accelerator would be on the other side of the country or anything like that. So I'm going to, you know, fully take advantage of the fact that it's close proximity as much as possible and stay involved to whatever extent I can.
Definitely.
So do you have a finished product at this point?
I'd say we're about, like, maybe halfway there. You know, we've got definitely finished features. We're kind of – so we – I don't know if I got into this already. My short-term memory is awful. It's the Diet Coke.
I get it.
We built the site pretty much out with kind of like a different methodology and a different look completely. And then we ended up changing like the core product of it. And then we had to rebuild everything kind of related around that to work with that. So we have, you know, beta testers working with it. And, you know, we told them like our new direction. They really liked it. So it's basically we're on like the second cycle of building it out again. And we're about halfway there. So
okay. So is that, I assume you'll spend a great deal of time in this accelerator doing more customer validation of,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
This certain feature sets and whatnot.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And inherently, we've talked to probably hundreds of potential customers, you know, just not just fans, but like musicians.
How do you find them? I think that's one of the big challenges. When I went through the Lean Launchpad thing, mm-hmm. And we had to do customer, you know, there's not a ton of podcasters in Louisville. They're around,
right?
But I had to go to Google groups,
yeah,
and find them there. So yeah. how do you guys ferret those musicians out?
So you know, that's like the internet, as you said, is like a really good resource to find people interested in the subject that you're working on. We happen to know a lot of musicians from being musicians, that really helped.
And everybody knows a musician. It's just absolutely incredible how vibrant the music community is here.
Right.
I mean, everybody you tell about the site says, oh, well, my son or my cousin or somebody would be very interested in learning about this. And you just make introductions. And
yeah.
It's actually really easy to find people that are interested in the site. We've gotten a lot of great feedback from them.
And, you know, we really did build the product to be, you know, fan friendly as well. And that's a very important thing to us. So it's not everyone knows a musician and everyone is a fan of music. I don't know a person who's not a fan of some music, you know, and then showing them kind of like how they can get involved in the process is exciting to them as well. So, through musicians we've known, local music shops, mostly through personal connections, actually just, you know, 5 degrees of separation.
Right. Do you go in with a planned set of questions to ask them or do you just start talking to them?
We just kind of start talking to them and kind of like, you know, we probably are going to change it in the future. Right now we kind of are like, you know, this is what we're trying to do. What do you think of it? You know, and then we show it to them. So like we start with kind of like a conceptual level and then we show them what we're working on to get their opinion. Now I think we're going to probably change that a little bit because I feel, you know, like we probably out of all the hundreds that we've talked to only gotten like really two pieces of like negative feedback that I can think of. And I feel like people just don't want to disappoint us.
Yeah, you know? They're just stroking you a little bit.
Yeah, so you have to ask those probing questions. Yeah, oh, sweet. You know, yeah. Can I go? You can pay for a lunch. promising free lunches also is a way to get good way.
Yeah,
to
that is
so.
Yeah.
Works.
We're going to start developing our approach to customers a little bit differently based on like, you know, learning about velocity and kind of the materials back behind it. Probing questions that maybe they think we want to like go in a different direction and see what they say, if they can get to this point kind of naturally or if they can, you know, give us some critical feedback on what we're doing without feeling like they're going to insult us. You got to kind of disconnect yourself from what you're doing in order to get like that truth, you know, of what they're saying about your product.
How much different does it look post Kaufman than it did before you went into that program?
The business model or the site itself?
Business model.
I would say the business model relatively is kind of similar. You know?
Yeah, didn't change all that much. We certainly think more about the customer validation piece than we did before.
Yeah, revenue model. I would say we definitely think about it a lot more.
Yeah,
hey, you got.
And we've made some good friends at Kaufman as well as mentors, and just generally through conversations that didn't necessarily take place at Kaufman, but just through the connections we've built through that program. We've definitely learned a lot and had a tremendous amount of feedback, gotten a lot of introductions to people that have helped us out as well.
Our IP lawyer we got from Kaufman.
That's right.
You know, I meet with Kaufman people a lot, you know, now, and it's just, it's a great community, and they really know their stuff. So
I'm going to display my ignorance here because I've been nose down on all of this podcast stuff and Kickstarter and I went through the Lean Launchpad thing, the Nucleus thing, which was different than Kaufman.
Yeah.
So here's where my ignorance will be displayed for all to hear. You know, do you do the business model canvas? That's specifically for Lean Launchpad.
Yeah, correct? We actually did a business model canvas early on for the KSTC was kind of moving in that direction.
Gotcha.
So we kind of did one for that.
But that's going to be hardcore at Velocity, though. That's the
All what it's all about. So I feel like we're pretty prepared going in with kind of that experience. We could always learn more about the process, and I think, you know, I completely agree with the business model canvas. You know, like we always kind of have these battles where it's, you know, just not really battles, but discussions on, you know, everything about the Lean Launchpad stuff makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Like customer validation. And I guess
it really was like duh.
Yeah, really?
You know,
You ask them what they want. And then
who couldn't have thought of this?
Right.
But nobody did.
Yeah. It's amazing. It really is like a scientific formula to like success, you know. And then I do have some questions on it, though, I guess, where you're doing something that I guess you're trying to, you know, Henry Ford said, and I hate to bring this up, but he said, you know, if I asked people what they wanted, they'd say a faster horse and buggy, you know, not a car. And
right.
I think, you know, not that I think I'm on like that level or anything like that at all, but, you know, I do wonder, you know, have you ever seen the Simpsons episode where Homer designs a car and he's got like four horns in it because they're like all conveniently located and it does awful. It's kind of like sometimes you know, we are our customers, so we kind of, to a certain extent, kind of had a good start. Ultimately, I think a lot of mentors here to what I'm saying now about the Lean and kind of like, you know, trying to do your own thing with some respect to customer validation would say that, you know, you can still get customer validation on like really innovative things if you do it right. So I guess my understanding of like the Lean Launchpad thing is it shows my ignorance, the fact that I think I might disagree with it in some aspects to a certain extent.
Yeah, I think part of the challenge of the customer feedback that, you know, Ron's sort of hinting at is that, you know, Collabra is a big idea. And I mean, you know, an online free recording suite is a sort of a standalone product, and you could maybe build a business around that. Song arrangement pane as well, something that maybe could stand alone, but we're trying to integrate that in with streaming audio, social networking, connectivity. And a lot of the value of the product really comes from, again, building that community. And the interaction between musicians. So it certainly does present a barrier to being able to test that out at the drop of a hat to a customer.
Right.
Because you don't have that ready-made community that they can engage in. So I ask, you know, people questions like, so your nephew plays guitar. He's been playing a couple years. So what would you do if you got a message on Facebook and he said, oh, I just played guitar on this song and I'm selling it for $1 on this site and they invited you onto the site, would you buy the song for $1?
Yeah, that's a good question.
You know,
would you go to the site?
They're like, absolutely. And I've met a couple people that say, no, probably not.
It's like your family members.
Okay, well, you know, they're your friends.
Honest.
I'm glad you're being honest.
You got a 100% closing rate. That's pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I figure if, you know, 1 in 10 people say they're not going to buy it, it's probably more like 5 in 10 that aren't going to buy it.
Right.
But every single one of them has said that they would share it with their friends and pass it along through their social networks as well.
Collabra works on guilt, I'd say.
Yeah. Especially, yeah. You can
see
who's interacting.
Well, it's like selling Girl Scout cookies door to door, something like that.
Every person who has like any sort of decent relationship with their parents are going to have at least one song sale, I think. You know, it's like, are their girlfriends or boyfriends, you know, someone's supporting that person, and it's just kind of like an act of support as opposed to like, you know, the actual money. It's like $1, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and you guys take a percent, and that's one of the revenue,
right?
One of the
that's one of the possible
transactional sort of thing.
Right. Right. Or maybe it could be a Kickstarter thing and it's like pay what you want to a certain musician. And then again, that would be,
it's a Radiohead thing, man. That's just not a Kickstarter thing.
Radiohead and Nine Inch Nails have shown that that is successful.
Yeah.
So they actually probably made more than they did with the record agent. I know they made about the same amount of money, but they were getting a bigger cut of it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's been an ongoing trend, I think, in music to move away from corporate production and really try to make music production in more grassroots.
Definitely.
And really have the artists connect with their fans more directly and get paid more directly. And we think Collabra is a great platform to maybe explore the possibilities of that trend and see what we can offer in that space.
Yeah. If you want to visualize kind of like, kind of to go on with what Ariel's saying. So we have this recording suite. You just, anyone can get on there and hit the red button and record. You know, if you've got a webcam on your computer or like a cheap mic or even a decent
How are you going to keep the pornographers away?
Right. Yeah.
I'm not
How are we going to do that? You know, we're going to have like moderation.
Think about it.
I know.
I mean, seriously.
We're an audio site primarily, so there's no video platform.
Yeah, so even if you did like the webcam, we only use the mic portion of it. So, okay. But that's not the same.
I'm only half kidding about what.
No, I know.
Yeah, I believe
we have like privacy settings and moderation settings on projects where people can kind of boot that stuff out and like they let the, you know, kind of. Like the Reddit, you know, let the community police itself to a certain extent. And of course, we'll get involved when we see really egregious things. But so you can get on there with hit the red button, your webcam mic picks up what you're saying, and you could just sing along to a song you're listening to, and you put it in there. And then you're competing with other musicians, and then you can like yours, and it instantly shows up on your Facebook, so people know that you've, like, it's all kind of tied together in such a way that, like, you inherently self-promote yourself.
So
musicians are really aggressive promoters in the first place. So,
yeah.
You know, we feel like we're kind of integrating this thing in, like, a way that's, you know, bringing the fans in and like connecting it to Facebook when you like your individual track and you're like, hey, support me because I want to really be on the song, you know, and you get all your friends over there and the other guy's getting all his friends on there and it's like heat mapping the show. Like it's like lighting up the show, like how it's becoming more popular and you can compare them visually as well as, you know, through your, you know, clicking like or whatever. So it is really like, you know, even the other collaborative sites where I don't think they do some of the a lot of the stuff we do. I also think they kind of exist in a vacuum. Like a social perspective, so
they
that,
do,
yeah, because it's like all musicians, and oh, I think that's cool, you know, and you can like an overall song, but like you get those fans and like voting your track up to be on the song. They're, you know, it's kind of like the American Idol thing, you know, people want to vote and like people want to give their opinion on like creative things, and you know,
and if an artist's success is based on the number of votes, just like an American Idol, where you know you tweet the number and support a particular artist, well, of course that artist and their family and all their friends are going out and trying to get as many people to tweet that as possible. And
right. The people are always right about that too.
Wow.
I mean, they always find the most talented person, right?
We've always joked that like, if music is awful in the future, like it's not our fault.
Right.
You know, like if we get like a bunch of like, if the fans say that they want Lady Gaga saying rah, 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 like over, you know, in the over in her songs.
Grohl had a big, he had a big rant about that.
Did he?
It's a meme that's going around the internet. It's like a picture of him and he looks, has a stern look on his face and it's like talking about auto-tune and,
know,
and you know, why would any kid stand up on stage and let three people tell him that he's no good and
right.
Get, you know, you got to, that's the easy, go get in a garage with your buddies and hammer this crap out and you got to suck for a while.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you build on it and you improve and you figure out how to play together and,
definitely.
You know, that's mm-hmm. the whole spirit of rock and roll.
Right. And, you know, I think that kind of relates to, like in a lot of cases, like when we hear criticisms of, you know, the transaction model was something that we were aiming for like a long time and kind of like, we're like, this is our starting point. Now we're going to test everything out. And we were going to test even under that as well. But we thought it was kind of a no-brainer. And it's because, you know, of my experience selling CDs and knowing, like, the support I got from my friends and family. I thought, like, you know, people are going to sell their music through this. But, like, Dave Grohl, he started out in a garage with his friends. So he thinks that's, like, really maybe the only way to do it. I think I sold my CDs, so I think that's the only way to do it. You
sure.
know, so it's kind of like that you sell empathy or something like that. Like I'm, you know, it's hard to change what you know to be true.
To get out of your own sphere.
And that's the customer development helps with that a lot as well.
So. Well, the collaborative environment helps people get out of their comfort zone. And
right.
I, you know, if I'm a guitar player, I could log on and find something to contribute to that would be completely out of my style.
Why not?
But what if I fit? Like,
yeah.
What if I can do something that fits? I'm fascinated.
What if you get like a sitar player from like, you know, somewhere and just are, you know, and you get like, do you ever see that commercial where it was like, I think it's a Geico commercial, and it's like this kid in Japan playing bass, and it's like the dad like goes in and like unplugs the stereo and stuff like that. Like, I want that kid, and I want that to be our bassist because he was really awesome. You know, like, and now something like this allows for that. So,
well, I think it's cool. You know, I'm a musician, so I'm a little biased. I'm gonna, you know, I have musician friends living all over the country.
Yeah, let them know.
I'm gonna try it.
Yeah, definitely.
Why not?
And I don't know if we've never given you like a demo, have we?
No.
We should show it to you.
We're here.
All right,
we got this big, beautiful new computer thing.
You can pull it up if you want.
Well,
after the podcast.
Yeah. It's,
we'll take a picture.
If you want to stay in the loop as to, you know, what's going on and actually have access to the site as we're building it out and we're going to be looking for testers, just go to collaboramusic.com and there's a spot there to drop in your email and you can sign up for a beta test.
And that's collabramusic.com, no space.
Is that same Twitter handle too?
Yes.
At collabramusic?
Yeah, not just on Twitter.
And Facebook.
And Facebook, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
On that, so... Well, we're definitely trying to get more people on there. So.
I love the deal, and congratulations again on the Velocity.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
What do you call that, an apprenticeship or
an accelerator?
We're part of a cohort.
That's so. A cohort, yeah.
What's the singular when you're in a cohort? Do you have like a special title?
I don't think so.
Cohortee?
Cohortee? No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know.
Welcome to your cohortion.
Thank you. I mean, that works. I'll use that. Yeah. I'm going to start using it everywhere. So.